Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran. It's great to be with you, and I am on the Camino, but today you have the gift of an interview with Dr. Bill Lyle, the pro-life doc. He is coming to the Seattle area for a fundraiser, and I'm super thrilled about that. I know that you'll enjoy this interview. During the first part of the program, I'm going to give you just an update. You'll have like a 10-minute update on how my Camino got launched, like just the first couple days, literally not even arriving yet at the Camino. So that'll be just for the first 10 minutes of the program. And then after that, you'll be able to enjoy the interview with Dr. Bill Lyle.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out, drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com.
Hey, welcome. All right, this is about a week behind, and there's a very humbling reason for it. The Camino has kicked my butt. I am spending the time that remains when I make it to the next stage, when I make it to the next city, I kind of crash and sleep, shower, sleep some more, eat something, sleep some more, get up, and then go back to sleep again. I'm spending so much of my time recovering from every stage, and there's a good reason for it. And I'm going to tell you the story about meeting the enemy on day one. I met the enemy and I met a guardian angel. And it's a kind of a repeating thing. I'm meeting the enemy most days on the Camino, and also meeting a guardian angel. God is sending me guardian angels every day with new bits of insight that are so helpful. Let's see, I just finished day six of the Camino, day six. I'm catching up to my own body. I'm catching up to my own life. And today had a good enough day where I have reserves. I have the energy in reserve to go back and start telling you the stories of the things that have happened. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start with day zero. Sunday morning, I woke up to take the flight to Paris. And drama starts right at the beginning when I put everything into my lumbar pack. I was going to choose the most minimal path possible and therefore not even need a backpack. Yeah, that didn't work out. My back was killing me when I had stretched a muscle or strained a muscle, and I had to just throw everything into a purple backpack. There you go. Very humbling. My daughter Luciana's school backpack has become my hiking pack. So all of the 2 months of training and looking stuff up and getting stuff pulled together, and in 7 minutes on the night before I'm leaving, I get one of my kids' school backpacks, and I've got to throw what I have into that. And you know what? God, it worked it out. God worked it out. It was actually a gift, because if I knew I was taking a backpack, I probably would have filled the backpack. And instead, the backpack essentially just took the things that I had intended to take in this much more tiny pack. So my backpack had room in it, which has been super helpful, having some extra space in it. So there was a very humbling, like, really, Lord, this is how it's going to begin? Well, there's more, because the next morning, the Sunday, a week ago, it was the 25th. Okay, time to get on my flight. And the text when I woke up really early, like 5 in the morning, it was, Hey, your flight to Salt Lake City, where you're going to catch your plane to Paris, is delayed. You know what? You might not flight may not make it in time. So we recommend that you change flights. And I'm like, really? I'd really like to have the details of my flights dialed in. I don't like surprises when it comes to flights. And I just was like, okay, I'm not sure what to do. Should I just trust that the delayed flight will in fact get out in time to make it or not? And so I said to Carrie, hey, Carrie, let's take a walk and pray. So we took a walk that Sunday morning, the last couple of hours we had together. And I'm like, let's just pray a rosary and just see if I can get to peace and get an insight. And at the end of it, Carrie was like, well, choose what is going to definitely get you there. Go with the difference. Go with the new flight. Well, that meant getting new seats. And so this is the story from day one. My flight to Seattle, fine. And then I got to the ticket counter for the Air Paris flight from Seattle to Paris, and I had looked it up online, and there was one seat open, a middle seat open next to mine. And I went up to the agent and I said, hey, am I in this seat? Yes. I said, is the seat next to me still open? Yes. I said, can you kind of protect that one? Give that one out last. And he said, I'll do it. And sure enough, get in the plane, and there's a seat empty. Praise God. So now I'm in like a better class seat just because I've got an empty seat next to me for this very long flight to Paris. And your seats kind of go back a bit, and they go back enough where I can, try to get a little bit of sleep. And I was like, okay, Lord, you got me on these flights for a reason. Lord, why am I on these flights? Right? Carrie likes to say, well, God will use any flight that you're on. And so I said, okay, well, even if I say it the other way, God, what are you up to? Or how can I be useful to you? Or what are you asking of me as my journey is starting on this flight? And I thought, oh, well, maybe it's the woman at the window. No, she wasn't interested in any kind of chatter, and I just let her be, and I'm just going to pray. So I just prayed, and then in the middle of the night, in this overnight flight, the woman in front of me, just immediately in front of me, starts yelling. She was probably mid-50s, and she is yelling and pushing. She's pushing at the seat in front of her, and her husband is trying to calm her down, but she won't calm down, and she's so loud that it not only woke me up, but they had two flight attendants next to her trying to talk with her. And her issue was that she had her seat up, right? So she didn't have it back to try to sleep. She had it up. Well, the person in front of her had her seat back. So here her seat is all the way up, and the woman in front of her seat back. So she has a tiny amount of room, and she's really upset at that. So I think the woman in front of her, whose seat was back, was like got in her face and was like, what the heck? I have a right to put my seat back. And I just watched this, and there was no giving, because the woman had a right to put her seat back. The other woman was just upset and was not going to give, and she wanted her to put her seat up. So I called over the flight attendant. I said, hey, look, if you want, I'll switch seats with the woman two seats up. And here's the crazy thing. She was sitting next to her husband, and there was only, well, guess what? There's an empty seat next to me. I said, why doesn't she and her husband come back to my row, and I'll take her seat, and I won't put it back. I'll just let it be up. And I just thought, oh, here's my penance and reparation. Here we go. And I ended up meeting Claudio. And that was the gift. The Claudio was in the window seat in the row where the couple just left. And we ended up having a great conversation about God and faith. And what opened the door was my willingness to make an act of sacrifice. And so it's amazing how God will give you opportunities to do little acts of sacrifice. And so even on the journey. So I hope that that's something for you to think about and maybe consider that God's going to give you a chance to make a little act of sacrifice or reparation or penance. Take it like that. And it wasn't something that I was imposing on myself. It was something that emerged, and I just chose to say yes to it. ended up being a blessing. So enjoy the interview with Dr. Bill Lyle, the pro-life doc. He is coming to the Seattle area for a fundraiser, and I'm super thrilled about that. I know that you'll enjoy this interview. All right, God bless you guys.
I want to welcome to the program Dr. Bill Lyle, the pro-life doc. Dr. Lyle, thank you so much for joining me all the way from, is it Pensacola, Florida?
Pensacola, Florida, yes, sir.
First of all, let me just say this. I heard about you from a dear friend who's a listener to my radio program, and he knows how much I'm passionate about the gospel of life and about rescuing preborn human beings from the slaughter of abortion and to end this horror and tragedy that has impacted our country for almost 50 years. It is so disturbing and such a tragedy that it continues. And he said, Tom, you have to have this guy on. He is the pro-life doc. He had me ready to go. He was so fired up. It was amazing. So I'm like, all right, let's do this. So reached out to you right away, and it's like, yeah, okay, let's go. So first of all, thank you for all that you do to stand for life as a doctor.
Well, thank you. It's an honor. I mean, I got into medicine to heal. We wanted to have healthy moms and healthy babies. And our goal is to show the life, the personhood, and the personality of the preborn in the womb and to save their lives. It's about changing hearts, changing minds, sharing the gospel and the message of forgiveness.
You know, Dr. Lyle, when I talk with folks on Facebook and I try to reach out, like, let's say, and build a bridge to an understanding about life in the womb, and this is with folks who are pro-choice, right? They're pro-abortion. Sure. And I'll say to them, look, this matter from a medical and scientific perspective is settled. Life begins at conception. And so just let me start with that simple entry point question. Is that too strongly stated, or how do you see it as a doctor and as a man of faith?
From a biblical standpoint, absolutely. But the biblical standpoint, just like all of the information in the Bible, it proves what we know in science. And science is always a little bit behind the scriptures. But in Genesis 1:26, God said, let us make man in our image. And that's an amazing thing that we're made in the image of God. After God created all of the stars, planets, galaxies, birds, fish, mammals, he said, all right, this is pretty impressive, but now I really want to dazzle you. And we're going to create something in our image, the image of God, and that was all of us. But one of the things that we might not think about is, yes, we are created in the image of God, but when were we created in the image of God? When I'm up and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm working with a mother, we're pushing the baby out. We're not created in the image of God at the moment that baby comes out of the womb. It's not that there was no person there on the inside. Then all of a sudden I deliver the baby and all of a sudden, wow, check it out. We're created in the image of God. It's not when we do the ultrasound and we see the baby moving. It's not even when we see that first heartbeat at 5 or 6 weeks. The only thing that makes sense from a biologic, fetal development, obstetrical standpoint is when did life begin? It is that moment of conception where there was one cell from the mom, there was one cell from the father, and they only represented the mom and the dad. But it's at that moment of conception when two cells become one cell. That one cell is genetically unique from the mom, genetically unique from the dad. It is a totally new person. It can even have a different blood type than that of the mother. And from that one moment, when we, if we were to look at the DNA of that one cell, a lot of people are doing Ancestry and Me or 23.com, and it's cool. I did it. I was 55 years old when I did it. And you give them a little bit of saliva, you send it off, and a couple weeks later, you get a report, and it goes back and tells you about your great, 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 great grandparents, hundreds of years. It tells you you're 23% Irish, 30% English, and it tells you who you are based on your genes. If we could do a study of when we were one cell, that DNA report right at that moment of conception would be different from moms, different from dads. That DNA report when we were all one cell would be identical to the DNA report that we send off to 23andMe when we're 60, 70, 80, 90 years old. We are unique at that moment of conception, and that is when we are created in the image of God.
You know, Dr. Lyle, you have spent an enormous amount of time, effort, and energy to bring this message of life in the womb out into the world. You mentioned Genesis 1:26, and it's followed by this incredible verse in 1:27, where the very first blessing in the scripture is announced, right? The very first blessing, be fertile, multiply, and fill the earth. These are like this triple blessing. And I feel like today we're living in a time, in a culture where those are like the triple threats, right? So the threat of conception is warded off through contraception. The threat of multiplying is warded off through abortion. And then we have population control to actually to ward off the threat of filling the earth. Is there a way in which we're living in a moment and in a culture where we've turned God's very first blessing, this threefold blessing, and turned it into a curse?
Yeah, and then along with that curse, if we were created in the image of God, I was speaking at a Messianic Jewish convention, and we're going over how we were created in the image of God and that fertility is a blessing. We were told to be fruitful and multiply. And a rabbi stood up in the back of the congregation when I was speaking. He goes, Oy vey, I get it. He says, we were created in the image of God at the moment of conception, and abortion is an attack against that image of God. He goes, abortion is an attack against God. It is evil attacking good. And I think that's what it comes down to as far as its basic nature, is that an abortion is a hatred for God. It's an attack against God, and it's an attack against that image. We hold a lot of images that represent something that's very special. We might look at the flag and say, that image represents something special to me. We might look at the cross and say, that represents something special to me. And there's one image that God said, look, of all this creation, I'm going to give you an image, and you can see my beauty, my creativity, and my life in this image. And that image is in all of us at that moment of conception. So it's an attack against God. It's a hatred of God.
Today, I'm talking with Dr. William Lyle. You can find out a lot about his ministry and mission to help nurture and foster a sense of life in the womb and help overcoming this tragedy of abortion by going to prolifedoc.org, prolifedoc.org. I'll give that website out more than once in the course of this interview. You'll find lots of resources there, videos, and many other things on prolifedoc.org. So Dr. Lyle, we hope and we would really have a confidence that people that enter the medical field and become doctors want to do no harm, want to preserve life. And yet you've gone a step further. What was it that made you feel so passionate about this issue that you created a website and engaged in a mission that has identified you as the pro-life doc?
One of the first things that we learn in medical school is just what you said, but we're taught it in Latin. That's prima non nocere, first of all, do no harm. And it is 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, and then a year of internship and 4 years of residency. And what are you taught? You're taught to have healthy moms and healthy babies. And we teach our residents up on labor and delivery. Those are our two rules. We want to have healthy moms and we want to have healthy babies. The governing body that represents all obstetricians and gynecologists as far as what is considered standard of care for caring for moms and babies is called ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They are pro-abortion. In fact, in anticipation, and I would even dare say hope, that we will have a president change in this upcoming election, ACOG has established a new fellowship. And what's a fellowship? A fellowship is if you haven't had enough fun in 12 years of school, you can do two or three more, and you can even get more education. So after you've spent 12 or 13 years to have healthy moms and healthy babies, you can actually do a fellowship and become a fellowship-trained physician in what's considered complex family planning. Well, what is that? It comes down to a two-year additional training in how to do late-term abortions and to take the lives of babies at any gestational age. Why would people spend 2 years learning how to take the life of a baby in the womb? Because they're really anticipating that there is going to be abortion on demand, that there'll be no gestational age caps from coast to coast. And just like if, you know, we are starting to get a vaccine for COVID-19, well, we've ordered a lot of syringes and we've ordered a lot of supplies in anticipation of that. Well, they're anticipating that that will be the law, the new law of the land. And it really comes down to, again, hatred for God, that you could study and see the ultrasound. We treat the preborn as patients at our hospital. We just spent $70 million on a new children's hospital, and we are saving the lives of babies that are born at 23 weeks gestation. Yet less than a mile on the other side of town is an abortion clinic called American Family Planning, where they can legally, and they advertise and market that they will take the life of a baby at 24 weeks gestation. Pensacola Beach is just on the other side of the bay from where I live here in my home now. And there are signs all up and down the beach that say, do not disturb sea turtle nest. And it cites state law. It cites federal law that if you, not only if you kill the baby sea turtle, but if you just disturb the sea turtle nest, you can be fined up to $100,000 and spend a year in jail for just disturbing these preborn sea turtles that were left in their eggs buried there in the sand. The interesting thing is that's just a couple of miles from American Family Planning, where there's no protection for the preborn babies on the other side of town. And what's also ironic is the law is based on the Endangered Species Act. And of all years, when was that passed? 1973, the same year that the U.S. Supreme Court said that the preborn were not persons and they did not have protection. We do surgery on the preborn. In our hospital, we can do blood transfusions as early as 19 weeks gestation. At centers around the country, they are doing heart surgery. They're doing spina bifida surgery. They are doing laser surgery. We are even able to do genetic, almost like we are doing 23andMe or Ancestry.com. We can do that on a blood test from the mom 7 weeks after conception. With a simple blood test from the mom, I can even tell you if that is going to be a boy or a girl, because this is a different person. If we treat the preborn as patients, then they are persons. And if they are persons, they deserve our protection.
Talking today with Dr. Bill Lyle, and he is giving us some time today. He is the pro-life doc. Go to prolifedoc.org to find out more information. So Dr. Lyle, again, when I engage with folks on this, sometimes one of the issues that comes up is, well, you know what, we can differ about this issue, and I care about a woman's right to choose, and so I don't want to trample on her rights over her own body. How do you respond to people who maybe are hesitant to get very engaged in conflicts that seem so politicized that there's no solution, and so we just better give women these rights? How do you respond to that?
Oh, sure. Well, the first thing you have to do is finish the sentence. A woman's right to choose, dot, dot, dot. A woman's right to choose what? If we are conceived and we are a new person at that moment of conception, when you finish that sentence, it's a woman's right to take the life of the preborn baby on the inside, which is genetically, I've delivered over 4,000 babies, and the mom and the mom's body, it is an amazing life support system. And it continues to provide the nutrients, the oxygen that the baby needs to survive. But from that moment of conception, genetically, physiologically, that is a new person, is a new individual. There's no difference between the baby that was born and is 1 week old and the baby that is 1 week after conception that is there on the inside. It's the same person. So you have to finish that that sentence and say, a woman's right to choose what? I have the opportunity to speak at a lot of medical schools around the country. And what I'll usually start off with is, let's talk about patient's rights. We're talking about a woman's right. Let's talk about a patient's rights. And I'll ask, if a patient presents to the hospital and needs a blood transfusion, but they are not a citizen of the United States, do they get a blood transfusion? Otherwise, they will die. And they all say, absolutely. They said, what if they need heart surgery, even if they weren't born here in the United States, should they still be able to get life-saving heart surgery? And they'll say, yes. I said, what if it's spine surgery? If they don't get this spine surgery, they're going to die. Do they have a right to get spine surgery, even if they don't have health insurance that they've signed up for? And they said, absolutely. I said, all right, patient one, two, and three, they all deserve to be treated as a patient because a patient is a person. And they're like, absolutely. I said, well, all these patients have a couple things in common. Number one, they're all my patients. And they're like, oh, that's pretty cool. I said, the other thing is all of these individual patients are patients of mine that are still in the womb. And their jaws will drop. And they're like, I hadn't thought about that. I said, what is the difference? If we're giving blood transfusions, heart surgery, spine surgery, laser surgery, they're patients. And even ACOG will say that a patient is a person is deserving of respect and bodily integrity. They're as valuable as somebody at the other end of lifespan, somebody who is 95 years old and has Alzheimer's disease, where they might say, oh, well, grandma's not the person she used to be. Well, guess what? Grandma is still a person, and she still has rights, and she still has value. Was the Supreme Court wrong when they said that the unborn were not persons in the legal sense? Absolutely. Was this same Supreme Court wrong in the Virginia Supreme Court case and in the Dred Scott U.S. Supreme Court case when they said African Americans were not persons in the legal sense? Absolutely. Was that corrected? Absolutely. Because yes, African Americans are persons and of the same value as anybody else. Was that decision in Virginia corrected? Yes. Was that U.S. Supreme Court decision reversed? Yes. Should the decision of Roe versus Wade in 1973, when they said the preborn weren't persons, should that be corrected? Yes. Do I think I'll see it in my lifetime? Absolutely. Because we are seeing how we are treating the preborn as patients, and if they're a patient, they're a person.
Today, I'm talking with Dr. William Lyle. You can find out a lot about his ministry and mission to help nurture and foster a sense of life in the womb and help overcoming this tragedy of abortion by going to prolifedoc.org, prolifedoc.org. I'll give that website out more than once in the course of this interview. You'll find lots of resources there, videos, and many other things on prolifedoc.org. Dr. Bill Lyle's talking with me today on Sound Insight, and I'm asking Dr. Lyle, who's right on the front line of delivering babies in his own practice in Pensacola, Florida, but also on the front lines of standing up for life, especially the preciousness and the dignity of the unborn, the preborn human beings that are at risk in abortion. Dr. Lyle, another argument that I'll often hear put forward is that abortion is a pragmatic decision because there just aren't enough families to receive these babies if they were carried to term and offered up for adoption. Our system would become overwhelmed, and there's just not resources or support for women who are quote unquote forced or would be forced if this was made illegal, abortion was made illegal, to either help them with their children or with regards to a number of families to adopt them. How do you speak to that?
Oh, well, first, if anybody is making that statement, they've clearly never tried to adopt a child. We have so many hundreds of thousands of moms and dads that are on waiting lists for years. One of my best friends, they tried for years in the United States to adopt a child. They ended up going all the way to China to adopt a girl with birth defects that was a little girl that was not loved and just was abandoned in China. So yes, we have plenty of people who would take those children in and would love them and care for them. And God forbid that we have a society that will look and say, you know what? We just don't have time for this. We just don't have the money for this. Oh, you know what? Especially in the medical community, when we start looking at somebody with a advanced cancer and we say, grandma has a grade 4 astrocytoma, this is going to be a lot of work. This is going to be a lot of effort to try to give her a quality of life and even to try to cure her. God forbid that the medical community and the medical profession take the easy way out. Because, yeah, it would be easy to say grandma has a lethal condition and she is going to die. So rather than putting in all this work and all this money, let's just give grandma a sedative and let's just potentially kill grandma, take her life. God forbid that we become a society that doesn't value the most innocent and the most important. That's how you really grade the society. How do they treat their most vulnerable? Our most vulnerable are going to be our pre-born. That is not a society that I want to live in. And that is obviously not a society that Jesus would have wanted to live in. When you look at Christ, how he said, hey, don't tell the little kids to get away from me. He says, bring those little kids on over to me. God has a love for the pre-born and for children. And God forbid that we have a society that starts to throw them away.
I'm talking again with Dr. Bill Lyle, the pro-life doc. Go to prolifedoc.org. You'll find out more about his ministry and mission to help not only raise awareness, but to literally save the lives of pre-born human beings. There is also, and let me hear you speak to this, Dr. Lyle, the reality of what happens to a woman who makes that decision, oftentimes feeling forced to actually have an abortion. And there has been a whole movement that has arisen, and it's centered around a sentence, I regret my abortion. Yeah. Is that something that you encounter in your own work professionally and in your mission and ministry, just the reality of post-abortion trauma, post-abortion hurt and suffering?
Oh, it's an incredible part of my practice. And a lot of times you don't realize how prevalent it is because a lot of times we don't ask that question. And a lot of times we don't deal with it within our churches. If we're not going to hear the truth from the pulpit, then where are we supposed to hear the truth? We need to be hearing from our priests, from our rabbis and our pastors, what the truth about abortion is, but also to say, is abortion a sin? Yes. But is this a forgivable sin that's covered by the blood of Christ? Absolutely. But if we're not hearing that message from the pulpit, I've had patients who have sat in churches for decades, knowing that they had an abortion in their past. And when you look at the different surveys, whether it's evangelical or whether it is Catholic churches, you will see between 24% of all the men and women in any congregation have personally been involved with an abortion.
Okay, and say that again. Well, you just said I've never heard before, and that is an absolutely stunningly high percentage. Please say that again.
Depending on what study you've read, and I've read several on this subject, when you look at the members of churches, whether it's an evangelical church or whether it's a Catholic congregation, you will see between 20 and 24% of the men and the women in that church have been personally involved in an abortion. And I see those numbers true in my practice. And when you ask, I mean, this is a huge burden. I was speaking at a men's conference and a gentleman came up afterwards and he was an older gentleman. He says, hey, can I have a minute of your time? And we had talked about forgiveness. We talked about redemption. We talked about the abortion pill reversal. And he came up to me afterwards and he says, before you bought your practice, and I bought a practice that at the time when I finished my residency, this practice was the largest provider of abortion services in our Tri-County area. We purchased the practice. We had the physician sign a restrictive covenant where he couldn't perform any abortions. He couldn't even practice medicine for 2 years. He retired and he moved back to Sweden. And we started off day one. We told the staff, you're welcome to stay. No abortions, no referrals. You refer, you're going to be fired. Just pack up your bag. But this gentleman came up to me and he says, you know, my daughter was 18. She was getting ready to go to the University of Alabama. And she came up to me and she said, Daddy, I'm pregnant. He says, I didn't know about pregnancy centers. I didn't know about how I can approach anybody from our church, but I wanted to be a supportive dad. She felt she couldn't go to college and care for a baby. He says, I took my daughter to what was the practice that you took over. He said, at that time, she was 17. She hadn't turned 18 yet. He said, I had to, as the dad, sign a consent. He says, I didn't swipe my credit card. He says, back then, you had to write a check. He says, I wrote a check for her to have this abortion. He says, we went into the ultrasound area. They did a quick ultrasound. And just real quickly, he said, I saw that heartbeat of the baby on the inside. He says, that was my first grandchild. He says, she went up that set of stairs that you showed in your presentation. She was up there for a half hour, and she came back. And that grandchild of mine was no longer there. And he said, that has haunted me. He says, I have sat in a church for over 25 years. And he says, I know Jesus. He says, my sins are forgiven. He said, but that has sat in my heart. And he described it as a lump of white charcoal that's been burning in my heart. He says, I felt so dirty that I couldn't even take it to God. God forbid that we have congregations, we have pastors, we have priests who never discuss abortion. But is abortion a sin? Yes. Is abortion, you know, forgivable? Absolutely. But he says, for 25 years, I sat in the congregation. I never heard that message. He goes, for the first time, I just called out to God. I said, man, I'm sorry. It was the wrong thing to do. And he says, you know what? Not only was that my first grandchild, he says, to this day, that was my only grandchild. And so there is hurt that is occurring between men and women who are personally involved in abortion, but it spreads throughout the rest of the family. It affects the grandparents. And so the church needs to be the voice. It needs to be a place of healing. Yes, it was wrong. Just like all the sins that all of us have performed and committed are absolutely wrong and prevent us from having a relationship without God unless Jesus intervenes. It needs to be the truth that's coming from the pulpit.
Amen. That's Dr. Bill Lyle joining me today on Sound Insight. He is the pro-life doc, and that's easy enough to remember. Go to prolifedoc.org. And when you go to prolifedoc.org, not only will you find an amazing number of resources, there are videos of the live things that he does and posts on Facebook, on YouTube. There are things that he does. And he also has an amazing video, a DVD called God's Miracle of Life, Seeing is Believing. God's Miracle of Life, Seeing is Believing. And in it, you are highlighting the importance of the ultrasound and how ultrasounds actually are incredibly revealing and can manifest and have amazing impacts on women. Would you talk a bit about the power of technology to help bring light to God's miracle of life?
Yeah, what we're really trying to use is the technology of modern obstetrics to allow the preborn to defend themselves, to let people see, these are my fingers, these are my toes. I'm an independent person. I have my own blood type and my own circulatory system. You can see my heart beating 18 days after conception, but at that moment of conception, genetically, I am a new person. So we use this technology to just show. And even if you were to go to YouTube, and if you want to see something amazing, put in fetal surgery. And you see centers around the country, and they're all competing for each other's business. They're all trying to outdo the other. You will see amazing images of how we are treating the preborn as patients, how we are repairing their hearts, their spines, and doing advanced surgeries. And they can't help when they are describing it. They might start off using the term fetus and use generic terms, but even their own emotions are taken over. And they say, and then the baby this, and then Joy this, and then, you know, Stephen this, and then we delivered this baby and the baby is doing great. The emotion and the personality and the personhood of these children comes through. So we use ultrasound in our office. I mean, we even have centers around our town. One is called Show Me and the other is called Peekaboo. These are centers just like the old Olin Mills when we were younger, where you would go get a portrait. But now you can do portraits of your preborn baby on the inside. You want to do a gender reveal. You can get portraits taken. You can then have them framed and you can have people come over. Everybody wants to do a gender reveal party. It's fun. You want to know, is this going to be a boy or a girl? Everybody gets creative. It's a person on the inside. And it's amazing how society sees this as a person. You know, we just saw, you know, that one of our, he and his wife just had the loss of about a 22-week baby. John, do you remember the name? He's a singer, and his wife, Christy, I don't remember their names. But everybody mourned the loss of their baby that was born too soon to survive on the outside. Nobody said, you know, cavalierly said, oh, John Legend, that was his name. Nobody said, oh yeah, they just lost their fetus, move on. No, people were mourning all over because they lost their child. And that's what we try to use is the ultrasound, MRI. There's some MRI images up there. But then, you know, is abortion a sin? Yeah. But you know, a lot of people don't realize the fastest growing form of abortion is with the abortion pill. 39% of all abortions now are performed with an abortion pill. And it takes a couple of days for the abortion pill to work, but it is 96 to 98% effective in killing the baby in the womb up to 10 weeks gestation. But here's the amazing thing. Just like if somebody overdoses on a narcotic, fentanyl, We can reverse that if we get in touch with them, and we can interact with a medication called Narcan, whether it's a shot or whether it's just a simple nasal spray. We save lives. Well, guess what? We can save the life of a baby when the mom is taking this abortion pill. I have tried this 10 times here in our region. We have been successful 7 times out of 10. Nationwide, we have trained over 500 doctors and nurse practitioners in the technique of reversing the abortion. Because do moms have regrets? Yes. And I would say when moms contact our hotline, you know, the vast majority are during the first 24 hours where they knew there was a person on the inside. They knew that they had made a mistake. Through some magic of using a medication called Prometrium, which we use in normal obstetrics all the time, we can reverse the effect of the abortion pill. And yeah, I've delivered over 4,000 babies. I remember delivering my triplets. I remember delivering my quadruplets because they're really unique. I don't even remember my twins because there's been so many of those. But I can tell you, I remember the names. I remember the delivery event of every one of those 7 babies that had a 98% chance of dying that we were able to become involved and reverse the effects of that abortion. We had a healthy mom and a healthy baby.
It's Dr. Bill Lyle joining me today. He is the pro-life doc. You go to prolifedoc.org. That's Dr. Bill Lyle, and he is joining me today from Pensacola, Florida, talking about this pressing issue, the moral issue of our time. So I have more to say because what you've said is so striking to me about the advances of technology and of medication are helping to preserve babies' lives. When you take a look at the contentiousness of this issue, the way that it's raised up right in front of our faces with all the political things happening, with the recent nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, the issue has become front and center again. Sometimes I hear people talk about statistics regarding how many people are pro-life, how many people believe that there's actually a baby at risk and at stake in abortion. What's your own insight into that reality of pro-life as a position or a stance among Americans today? What do you see and what do you hear?
What I really see, especially in the younger generation, that is so visually oriented as far as their learning, that they are always on YouTube, they're always on Instagram, they're always on social media, and what they see is the reality. And here's a quick example of how this works. My daughter graduated from the University of Florida, and 2 years ago, she was in the library, and a gentleman came up to her. He introduced himself. He says, "Are you Sydney Lyle?" And she looked at him, and she goes, "Yes." And then he says, "Are you the one who puts up all those videos that your dad does of the babies on the inside?" And she goes, "Yes." He goes, "Could I just have a moment of your time?" And she said, "Sure." He goes, "I've always been taught that, you know, it's a woman's right to choose." And he says, "I've always been pro-abortion." And he said, "It's her right and whatever she wants to do is fine with me." He says, "But I've been watching the videos that your dad puts up, videos of ultrasound describing surgery and the genetics and the science." And he says, I wouldn't say I'm 100% pro-life, but he says, "I sure am not 100% pro-abortion." He says, "I've really learned something." He says, "I have learned so much from what we're being taught is from a scientific standpoint, that is genetically a different person, has a different blood type, and we treat them as patients. And we all know that a patient is a person." So it's when they see the truth. I mean, show them the truth and the truth will set them free. So we need to have more visual training aids that are available so that people can really understand the truth. And I really appreciate the term that you've been using. You've been using the term preborn. Why is that so important rather than the term unborn? Unborn just talks about at this particular time, this baby is unborn. What's the significance? Preborn states that at this point, this person is preborn, but the normal expectation is that they will then be born. Just before you send your child to school, you send them to preschool because the normal expectation is your child is going to go to preschool and then follow up with school. You don't watch the ungame show before you're going to watch sports. You watch the pregame show because the normal expectation when you watch the pregame show is that you're going to watch the game. Same thing with preborn. We watch the preborn. We show ultrasound of the preborn. We listen. When we do ultrasounds in our office, we want to use every sense possible. We want them to see the baby. We even want them to hear the baby's heartbeat. You know, people are always walking around with their Beats by Dr. Dre and their, you know, their AirPods in their ears, because life from sound is very significant. Sometimes that is enough to hear that thump, 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 to say that is a life that is there within the inside. So this generation is very visual. They are very sound oriented. What they see is the truth. And that's all we're trying to show them. We're just trying to show them the truth. They've really been sold a bunch of lies that this is just a blob there on the inside. It is not. It is a baby, and we treat them as a patient.
Dr. Lyle, and again, I encourage you to go to prolifedoc.org, prolifedoc.org. Someone once said, and I found it very striking when I heard it, I'd love for you to respond to it, that what's at stake in abortion is not only the humanity of the preborn human being, but our humanity is at stake in abortion. Our humanity, because we're the ones who are permitting this horror to continue to be legal and to continue to happen. How would you respond to that? That what's at stake in abortion? Yes, it's the first of all and most of all, the life of the child in the womb and the impact on the mother and others involved. But we're also impacted by it.
Sure. I mean, when you look at all the hate, you look at all the animosity and all the violence in our culture, how somebody will be killed just for their sneakers. It's because we are from a very young age, we are exposed to the fact that, well, you know, we aren't something special. We weren't created in the image of God. We aren't loved. And when you have that kind of a society being taught that, then of course, if you can take the lives of almost a million babies a year, then whether it's in the womb or whether it's outside the womb, you're really not going to see that value. And for those that are my age and getting older, guess what? You know, that value transcends to the elderly as well, where we will be looking at resources and healthcare. It's like, you know what? She's just not the person she used to be. He's not the person that he used to be. Do we really want to prolong their life and use these resources when they're just not the person they used to be? Personhood is huge. You look throughout history, if you want to take advantage of any group of people, you deny them a personhood. The Reichsgericht, which is the German Supreme Court, said that Jews were not persons within the legal sense. You want to kill 6 million of them, take all their property and their wealth? You just say they're not persons. You know, the Native Americans were deemed not to be persons. Women, when it came to the right to vote, were not considered persons. African American slaves were not deemed persons in the legal sense. So when you deny the preborn of personhood, then the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to deny the elderly of personhood. And it is a marker of a society, and it's a society that I don't want to see. But from a spiritual standpoint, we've taken the lives of 64 million babies since 1973 here in the United States, is what the best stats show. That is every man, woman, and child in the state of California and the state of Florida since 1973. What is it? Go and read Judges 3, 4, 5, and 6. And what does it say? It says, "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord." And God didn't just take his hand off of his chosen people. It says that the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. And then the Lord strengthened their enemy. The Lord delivered them into bondage, delivered them into the hand of enemies. There is a lot at stake here. Is the taking the lives of 62, 64 million children created in the image of God, is that doing evil in the sight of God? Absolutely. We need to repent. My concern is that we've had a protection on this nation, and we've had an amazing blessing upon this nation, and we have growth, and we've been blessed like no other nation on the planet ever has. Yet if we continue to do evil on the side of the Lord, there's no reason that God has to protect us, and there's no reason that he can't raise up hands that would punish us and strengthen our enemies. So there's a lot at stake.
Wow, Dr. Lyle, boy, you just you put it right out there, folks listening, that when we hear about this issue of what's at stake in a human life, what's at stake in abortion, it impacts our lives. It impacts the stewardship that is ours, that we were planted in this moment. We were planted to live in America, and we have a responsibility. We have a stewardship that is ours, not only knowing the truth, but then to live the truth, to be salt, light, and leaven with this gospel of life, to let it be sown once again into our nation so that it can give rise to a protection for every human being from conception to natural death.
Next Up Pregnancy Services Gala is Saturday, September 14th at Holy Rosary Parish in Edmonds. Next Step provides compassionate care for pregnant women, STI testing, reproductive education, and family resources. This year's speaker is Dr. William Lyle, the pro-life doc. Come for an evening of encouragement and fun and fellowship. Register and sign up at nssupport.org/gala2024. Questions? Call 425-329-4569.
Dr. Lyle, I live in the state of Washington, and we have the sort of the tragic record or fact that it was 50 years ago that we legalized abortion in the state of Washington before it was legalized federally. And sure enough, you take a look at which were among the first states to legalize physician-assisted suicide. Once again, it was the state of Washington. And so that loss of a sense of dignity at the beginning of life transferred into the end of life. But here's the irony of that tragedy is that the very initiative that legalized physician-assisted suicide was called Death with Dignity.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only way to cover over such a darkness is to call it something that reverberates and rings true to our lives. And so I think that's one of the sad tragedies that we face is that rhetoric replaces truth and insight into reality.
Yeah, and whether you look at from a medical standpoint, you look at a legal standpoint, you look at good versus evil, boy, it really comes down to one thing. I mean, what changes hearts? What changes behaviors? What changes minds? It comes down to the gospel. It's the gospel that God loved all of us. You know, it tells us in the Psalms, when were we sinners? In the NIV, the word is actually we became sinners from the moment of conception. And we read in Romans how God loved us all enough that he sent his son. He came to earth. He lived a perfect life. He gave his life for us on the cross. He was then buried for 3 days and he conquered death and he rose again. If we believe that, we have eternal life. Well, when were we sinners? We were sinners at that moment of conception. So if God loved all of us, including the preborn, enough that he would send his son and make a way for us to spend eternity with him and in communion with him, that's a love for all of us. So abortion is really attacking that message. It is the gospel that is going to change behavior. It's the gospel that's going to change minds. And it's the gospel that's going to save our nation.
Amen to that. Dr. Lyle, I have one final question for you because I know that I want to be respectful of your time here. Dr. Lyle, you travel the country, you speak this message of life. You are the pro-life doc. Go to prolifedoc.org to, again, see all of the various resources and ways that you can support and walk with him in this mission and ministry. As you do travel about and have a chance to interact with so many, what would you identify as some of the signs of hope that the gospel is pushing back, the kingdom is breaking in, that this battle is being waged, and we can see signs of hope and victory that the Lord and the gospel of life will win?
I see it in Students for Life. It's an organization that I'm involved with. When we look at this younger generation that is so visually oriented, and they are becoming armed with the truth, and we need to train them. We need to train them and teach them about the things that we've discussed over the last hour, and even give them that information. They always have a phone on. Everybody is always willing to look at a video. Have some of these videos ready. Show somebody what the truth is, because that is the important, that's where I see the bright side. I see the bright side in the eyes and in the spirit of the young who want to get out there. And when you arm them with the truth, they want to get out there and share the truth and they can make a difference. You know, for 4 years, I worked as a lifeguard and never had any life that I saved except for one time when I actually saw a child that was drowning. I ran off the dock and was able to, you know, bring that child back. Our students with their phones have enough information and enough tools that they can convince somebody that this is a person on the inside, that is a patient on the inside, and they are worthy of saving. That's where I see my hope in this younger generation.
Amen to that. I know that I see that as well, the young people, that they are abortion abolitionists, or I am the pro-life generation.
Amen.
And it's one of those things where they're like, I say that my grandchildren are going to say to me, how did you let this happen? How could you be part of that generation that let this happen? And it's speaking as if you're speaking to, say, Germans living at the rise of Hitler. And why? How could you let the Holocaust happen? What were you doing?
How did you let slavery happen in the United States? And we're going to look back at that. And hopefully we will save at least one Planned Parenthood, just like they preserved Auschwitz, to make a statement and saying, this happened. We will never let this happen again. We need to preserve just one Planned Parenthood, have it just be a museum, just as a testament to the evil that was allowed to go on. But then finally we came to our senses and we righted that wrong.
Amen to that. Dr. Bill Lyle, thank you so much for taking so much time with me today, sharing on Sound Insight about the important mission and work that he's doing on prolifedoc.org, prolifedoc.org. Thank you, Dr. Lyle.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. God bless y'all.